Welcome to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, where it's all about smart, efficient training so you can crush your cycling goals. And now, your host, Coach Rob Manning.
All right, welcome everybody to episode number 60 of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, where we make real science real simple. I am your host, Coach Rob. I've got a great show for you today. First, I've got a couple of quick announcements for you, though. The website, the Daily Grind Cycling Journal blog, the episode show notes receptacle, online training plan store, and past episodes of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast is all available at tailwind-coaching.com. And the podcast show notes for this particular episode of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast can be easily reached at tailwind-coaching.com/60. That's the number 60. I encourage you, head on over to the website, sign up for the Tailwind Coaching newsletter at tailwind-coaching.com/signup, S-I-G-N-U-P. And share that link with your friends. When you sign up, you're going to get free coaching advice, free workouts, fitness information, special offers, and all kinds of other interesting stuff delivered to your inbox. Now, as a encouragement for you to sign up for that newsletter, I'm offering a 1-month-long free training plan along with a couple of other tidbits that will follow that training plan. So head on over and sign up for that and use it to get some motivation and get out there and get strong. If you need to contact me, you can contact me at coachrobdc@gmail.com. You can follow me by clicking any of the icons in the upper right-hand corner of the website at tailwind-coaching.com, including following me on Strava, on my RSS feed, through Stitcher, via email, on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, or on Twitter at coachrobdc. Now, speaking of this podcast, I encourage you to follow the link in the show notes, or if you're listening on iTunes, head on over to the podcast homepage and give me a 5-star rating. If you like what you hear, that rating helps me move up the ranks. It helps me reach more people. And the more people that I can hear, or the more people I can reach, more people I can hear would be great. The more people I can reach, the more people I can help, and they get this free advice out there. And that helps them ride more and enjoy riding their bike a little bit more. I encourage you, visit the online training plan store for complete training solutions for all your major season goals, your grand fondos, your races, your rides, your general fitness, and cyclocross, of course, coming up. And if you're heading into your off season, then check out strength training. Of course, that's the topic of this podcast as well. And of course, don't forget to take advantage of my training plan support. That gets you a coach for a small percentage of what it would normally cost. It's about 30% of the cost of a normal one-on-one coaching plan. The caveat here is you buy the off-the-shelf plan from my downloadable training plan store. You add the training plan support to your basket 1, 2, or 3 months, and you purchase that, and I coach you through that training plan, and I actually help you get the most out of it by moving workouts, adding workouts, and changing your goals and things like that. $30 a month, folks. That's what it takes to get your coach's brain. I do possibly have a one-on-one space available. Shoot me an email, coachrobdc@gmail.com, if you're looking for something like that. And if you head on over to the site to check out the blog, the show notes, or anything else, I encourage you to visit my sponsors. They contribute a couple of bucks to the hosting and bandwidth costs of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, and they help keep this podcast free for everybody. So in the upper right-hand corner in the menu bar, there's a link called Sponsors. You can click through to any of my sponsors, and of course, purchasing anything from there will contribute a few dollars to website costs and production costs. And in no certain order, Road ID will speak for you when you are unable to. The Sufferfest for indoor training workouts, if you're looking for some high-quality video, that's a great way to go about it. U.S. Wellness Meats for hormone-free grass-fed awesome, awesome proteins, which are going to be valuable if you're following the advice in today's podcast. The Bulletproof Exec for all kinds of biohacking, gizmos, and gadgets. My Amazon store, which contains my recommended training tools, Garmin devices, and other neat paraphernalia. And of course, Exos Nutrition, a high-quality nutritional supplement company. All supplements designed for health, well-being, and improved performance. And I will say again, one of the best and most complete multivitamins that I have ever encountered. And a couple of really great training supplements in terms of L-arginine, which is one of them, and L-carnitine, which is another one that I've been experimenting with lately, but that'll be for another podcast. Of course, don't forget, for the loyal listeners, there is a discount code at the end of this podcast on the website, on the episode show notes, at tailwind-coaching.com/60. So, without further ado, cool. I managed to get all the information in 5 minutes. Let's get to the topic of today's podcast, which is actually going to be maintaining strength gains during the cycling season. All right. It is obviously no secret that cycling is an aerobic sport. This goes without saying. Cycling success is very often predicated on one's ability to train and adapt your aerobic system. However, there is no such thing as an aerobic sport that does not require some form of muscular strength. Aerobic conditioning alone will not get you to the top of a podium, or to the top of a Grand Fondo, or to a PR on a Strava segment. Your body needs strength and stability to be able to really efficiently utilize its aerobic capacity. There has to be a link between your lungs and your pedals, and of course that link are your muscles, or those links are your muscles. When properly working, they work as one giant unit. So in terms of multiple links versus one link, there's actually some argument to be said about that. However, that is something that we can wait and discuss at a different time. Now, the issue with strength and stability is that it is essentially 100% like your aerobic conditioning and your aerobic capacity. And it's honestly just like any other skill or any other activity that you do. And that being said, if you don't use it, you lose it. The problem with cycling as a sport is that once people get into the season, into the competitive season, into the racing season, into the general riding season, people tend to take their training outdoors. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, believe me. I love being outside. In fact, being outside is millions and millions and millions of times better than being on a trainer. However, the problem with that is people basically eschew any kind of strength training in favor of more riding time. All right, I can't tell you how many times I hear people saying, well, you know, I up my mileage to 200 miles a week, and I'm not getting any faster. I'm just tired, and I don't feel strong, and I feel... Don't even have to go any further. If that sounds like you, this is the perfect podcast for you, because it will hopefully shed some light on those things. Maintaining strength throughout the season, especially if you've spent time in the off season working on muscular strength, doing some kind of strength training program, whether it's my raw strength program, whether it's somebody else's strength program, whether it's just a Pilates class, whether it's yoga, whether it's anything of that nature, if you've put the time in during the winter to really make some strength gains, yet you let all of those gains deteriorate throughout the season, you will find yourself feeling tired, feeling weak, and wondering, what happened? I started the season so strong, and now everything's just falling apart. All right. The problem is that you need to maintain that strength throughout the season, and that's easier said than done. And there's a couple of reasons behind that, which we're going to explore. And the main reason, the absolute main reason, that people tell me, oh, I'm slowing down, I feel tired, as the season wears on, is because they simply have run out of strength. How do they run out of strength? Well, basically you spend the off season lifting and doing deadlifts and going to the gym, and you're looking really good and you're looking really bulky and you've got some extra muscle on you. And this is very common, that people start to ride and they start to lose all that muscle. When they start to lose that muscle, they actually lose the ability to put force into the pedals. Okay, many of you may have seen this. Man, my sprinting at this point in the season is really, really, really bad compared to what it used to be at the beginning of the season. No kidding. I'm sure your pants are also looser too. All right. The problem with strength with cycling is that strength loss tends to occur because aerobic exercise, cycling is an aerobic exercise, running is an aerobic exercise. Aerobic exercise in general is catabolic in nature. Now, what does that mean? Catabolic is basically a term that refers to the breakdown of tissues, the breakdown of chemicals, the breakdown of enzymes. All right. Essentially, what it means for our purposes is that cycling, the more that you go out and ride. So if you up your mileage from, say, 75 miles a week to 200 miles a week, more than double your output. Increasing the amount of aerobic activity you do, your body, from an evolutionary standpoint, will sit there and say, listen, I'm being asked to push myself in an aerobic fashion. I'm being asked to chase something or run away from something. I've got all this extra muscle. All that extra muscle requires oxygen. It requires blood supply. It requires me to feed it with glycogen or fatty acids, or in basic terms, I have to feed it ATP, which is, of course, the 3-phosphate adenosine triphosphate, 3-phosphate energy molecule that your body uses as an energy currency for, you know, simplicity's sake. But your body says, I've got all this muscle, and I'm being asked to move all this muscle faster and faster and faster. Your body does not know the difference between riding a bike and running for its life from a lion, a tiger, a bear, or something else that's trying to kill you and make you dinner. All right? From an evolutionary standpoint, that's what your body's thinking. And your body, when it sees that kind of condition come its way, will tell itself, I got to get rid of some of this. So that catabolic nature of an aerobic exercise will invariably lead to breakdown of all the muscle that you spent all the winter trying to build. All right? Your body's ultimate goal in cycling, in running, in any kind of aerobic exercise is to break down and stop and get rid of, not even stop, but get rid of unnecessary tissue that does not help you go faster. And in the process, by breaking down that unnecessary tissue and getting rid of it, it makes you lighter, which makes the power you are producing more effective. All right? I can go into the side effects, the other effects, I shouldn't say side effects, but the other effects of aerobic training are increased muscle efficiency, increased metabolic efficiency, increased oxygen uptake kinetics, and things like that. But those are very, very well known. Okay. High intensity exercise that most people undertake during the cycling season, the intervals that you're doing, tends to stimulate that metabolic efficiency, stimulate those oxygen uptake kinetics, tends to build your VO2 max, raise your VO2 max. All of that causes a loss of muscle fiber bulk, muscle fiber density, and attempts to increase your efficiency through that pathway. Now, how does that really happen and what can we do about it? All of the processes in your body, whether it's aerobic adaptation, whether it's strength training adaptation, whether it's adaptation to chronic stress, whether it's recovery adaptations that happen while you sleep, are more than basically all, there are a few exceptions, controlled by hormonal cascades. And the hormonal cascade that we're looking at in this case, in the case of aerobic exercise and versus strength training, is the cortisol cascade. What is cortisol, first of all? Cortisol is a stress hormone that is produced by two small glands on top of the kidneys, all right, called the adrenal glands, and they actually produce this in response to stressors. In fact, it's typically... I'm having a tough time speaking today. Typically, must have been all the dirt I ate on my ride this morning. I just did come back from my ridiculous dirt road training ride, which was just sickeningly good. But whatever, I digress. Cortisol, secreted by the adrenal glands, is typically referred to as the fight or flight hormone. It's a stress hormone. So when your body perceives some kind of alarm, your body releases a shot of cortisol, and that cortisol will help to increase your aerobic capacity, your VO2 max, your ventilatory threshold, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, what it does under longer-term circumstances, as opposed to a couple of minutes to an hour, the longer it's active, the longer it's released, the more it will catabolize muscle, suppress testosterone, suppress IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor, and suppress human growth hormone. Now, for those of you who've read any of the other stuff over on tailwind-coaching.com, especially my biohacking series, you will know that Three of those, testosterone, IGF-1, and human growth hormone, are actually quite important. And they're quite important from a respect of they are recovery hormones. They're anabolic hormones. Another side effect of cortisol is cortisol will actually cause a decrease in a testosterone precursor called DHEA, dihydroxyepiandrosterone, and will cause an increase in adrenaline hormones, such as epinephrine or epinephrine, etc. And the main reason why is because cortisol, along with testosterone, DHEA, etc., are all derived from the same precursor hormone. So the idea here is if that precursor hormone happens to be called pregnenolone, if there's 100 units of that, and at rest you're producing 50 units of testosterone, 25 units of DHEA, and 25 units of cortisol, that relates to 100. Now there's a lot, granted, there's a lot more going on than that, but this is for simplicity's sake. Now, if you're suddenly tasked with running away from something, or as your body sees it, going out and exercising, riding for 2 hours, if you increase cortisol by 50 points, now you're putting out 75 points worth of cortisol, there's only 25 points of pregnenolone or 25 units of pregnenolone left to create DHEA, which is a testosterone precursor, and or testosterone itself. And of course, like I said, there's a whole lot more going on than just those three hormones. So that, in fact, that cascade is a remarkably complex cascade. And that's part of the reason why there's been an explosion in anti-aging medicine lately is trying to sort of hack that cascade and almost turn back the hands of time a little bit. Cue the R. Kelly music here. No, actually, please do not cue the R. Kelly music. I'm not going to fix that in post. Don't worry. Anyway, cortisol, inherently, it's designed to mobilize fat, mobilize protein from your muscle, and mobilize glucose to respond to stresses via your fight or flight response. That's the take-home point here. Fat, protein in your muscle, and glucose are all things that your body needs in order to maintain muscle mass. So if it's all being used up by your two-hour ride, there isn't going to be much left to maintain your muscle mass. Your body's going to sit there and it's going to say, I don't have enough fuel for all of these muscle cells, for all these different cells, and it's going to start getting rid of some of them. It's going to start chewing them up. It's going to start eating them. All right. Now, there are a couple of other issues with this fight or flight response, and one of the major issues with this fight or flight response tends to be the fact that in today's society, for the most part, we're pretty stressed. I see patients 5 days a week, and I can probably tell you that approximately 95 to 99% of those patients have some kind of significant stressor going on in their life. Of all the people I coach, I can't tell you how many times I've gotten emails from the people that I coach saying, work has been crazy, I've been really busy, I've got my family that I'm working with, and we're going on vacation soon, and I just haven't had some time to train, and when I've been training, I feel like poop. It's a really interesting thing, because if you would take those people, and I've done this with a couple of patients, especially a couple of athletes, take those patients, or take those athletes, or take those clients, and have them do a really thorough and complete metabolic panel. Basically draw some blood and run a bunch of metabolic testing on them. I would almost guarantee that most of those people who are saying, I feel really tired, I'm really run down, I'm really stressed, they're going to have one of two things. One, they're going to have either extremely high cortisol levels, and that's in the short term, or they're going to be facing what's called adrenal exhaustion, where the body has been on high alert for so long from lack of sleep, from stress, from worrying about your taxes, from worrying about your paycheck. Your kid got in trouble at school. You got a vacation coming up that you haven't packed for. You're in trouble at work because you didn't get something done. All of those things add to your cortisol production, and the more cortisol production you actually have, the more potential you have to actually just deplete your body. And that is especially true with people who don't tend to sleep much. The less you sleep, the less your body has time to relax, come out of that fight or flight, that stressed response, and relax and rebuild a little bit. You see, it's entirely impossible for your body to do any kind of anabolic work or rebuilding work when it's in a sympathetic or fight or flight response, depending on how you want to look at it. Sympathetic is simply another technical term for that fight or flight stress response. Typically, your body repairs and recovers in a parasympathetic mode, parasympathetic meaning that rest or digest type of paradigm. So when you have a long weekend, you get some downtime and you feel really good and really rested, and you get on the bike on that Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday morning again, and suddenly you're flying, you feel awesome. That's because your body was given enough time away from stress, enough time to recover and rebuild, and it's ready to rock and roll again. And thus the cycle repeats again. You hit that fight or flight, that sympathetic response, starts to chew up your muscles, starts to chew up your fat and your protein and things like that. And that's when you actually start to wear down again. Now, one of the other side effects here, cortisol is an interesting creature because as a stress response, what it will try to do is it will try to stock your body with extra fuel that it can use in that chronically stressed state to get away from danger, get out of danger. So it, by that nature, it sounds counterintuitive, but it is true that cortisol, high cortisol for longer periods of time, will contribute to fat increases on your body. So the more stressed you are, most people who are stressed tend to do two things. They tend to not sleep and they tend to stress eat. That's a very common thing. That combination plus the high cortisol levels tends to lead to increased body fat percentage, which is kind of counterintuitive and also counterproductive to what most of your training is about. So how do you manage this? How do you sort of fix this problem? And how do you stop this constant stress response from being an issue? Well, it's really not just as simple as stopping that stress response. What you can do, aside from doing things like meditation and getting enough sleep and supplementing properly, there are a few couple of tricks here. And there's actually a trick that I'm going to share with you right now, which is one that I have used in the past. And that is simply a fact of during high volume bouts of high intensity exercise. So during your really hard build phases of your training plan, during your peak parts of your training plan, times when you're going to be doing a lot of aerobic work, supplementing every day 4 grams of branched chain amino acids, 6 grams of glutamine, and 1 gram of vitamin C will actually help to combat cortisol buildup, and it'll help to stimulate anabolic pathways. And those anabolic pathways will be further stimulated by some of the work I'm going to talk about in a few minutes here. And the work that we're going to talk about is basically strength training during your season. Okay, strength training itself also helps to combat cortisol buildup and that sympathetic response by increasing and stimulating anabolic pathways as opposed to catabolic pathways. All right. Strength training is such that when you lift weights, for example, you deal with micro tearing of the musculature. Basically, your body repairs that micro damage in your muscles and it repairs it a little bit stronger than it did previously. And the reason being is if I'm being asked to do this, if I'm being asked to lift 100 pounds today, I need to be able to make that really easy by constantly increasing that application of weight and force. We can actually cause your body to adapt further. And it does adapt and build through anabolic pathways, increasing human growth hormone, IGF-1, testosterone, and other anabolic factors. There are a couple of studies that have shown that reducing cortisol through the use of that branched chain amino acid, glutamine, and vitamin C complex has some potential benefits. A study by Marcet, Conley, Stonefleck, Kearney, Shermer et al. Effects of ascorbic acid on serum cortisol and testosterone cortisol ratio in junior elite weightlifters. Interesting concept that we're talking about weightlifters here. It's from the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research, and that's from 1998. I'll include a link in the podcast show notes at tailwind-coaching.com/60, so you can take a look at that. There's another study by Gleason, Lancaster, Bishop et al. Nutritional strategies to minimize exercise-induced immunosuppression in athletes from the Journal of Applied Physiology in 2001. I'll include a link for that in the show notes as well. Now, it's worth noting that many, many, many times when I see an athlete who is tired, who is basically on a constant fight or flight response. They're stressed. They get sick very easily. Cortisol, high cortisol, tends to decrease and suppress your immune system. So that is something of a clue as well. If you find yourself getting that dreaded late summer cold, you may need to think about altering your training or take a little bit of time off to recover. It's your body basically telling you to slow down a little bit. All right. So we've gone over a couple of quick supplemental ways to break this cycle a bit. I've explained the concept behind cortisol and why it tends to burn up your musculature. Now, we're going to go through here and I'm going to basically give you some ways to really boost your muscular strength in the middle of the season and maintain a really strong body. All right. And the way to do that is strength training. Now, I've got firsthand knowledge of this because I've been spending a fair amount of time in the gym trying to regain the strength that I lost from being crashed out in a race in April and subsequently doing almost no exercise for approximately 6 weeks, particularly no upper body exercise and no core exercise. So naturally, even though my aerobic capacity tends to improve and continues to improve as I continue to ride and train, I'm pretty much unable to muscle over things the way I used to. That is until I started going back to the gym, putting some extra weight on the bar, and doing a little bit of extra strength training to try and make up for the muscle that I lost. And the key here is that you don't need a full-on off-season strength program to really make big gains during the season. And the reason you don't need a full-on off-season strength training program to make big gains during the season is that you're doing no lifting during the season to begin with. So you can get away with a stripped-down program, even a program that's essentially body weight-oriented. That will simply elicit the hormonal gains and the hormonal balance changes that you need to really get some benefit out of your strength training. Now, there is a huge, huge, huge caveat to all of the information that I am about to give you. And the big caveat here is that if you get over aggressive with your strength training during the season, okay, I'm going to repeat this. If you get over aggressive with your strength training during the season, you will find you will have problems riding your bike. This should be very obvious to everybody who's ever lifted in any capacity in the past or before. Strength training tends to make you sore. You tend to have some occurrence of what's called DOMS or delayed onset muscle soreness. And that can last anywhere between a day and 3 days, depending on how hard you've worked, how adapted your body is to strength training in general, and how different the muscles are that you are engaging in your strength work compared to your daily living, your daily fitness activities, whatever they may be, and your cycling. And really the key of strength training during the season is to maximize the gains for muscles that you don't use on the bike, things that tend to be neglected. And a big one of those is your core. But I'll get to that in just a second. The big thing here is the timing of your strength training. Absolutely, 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 the timing of your strength training. And the timing of your strength training is incredibly important. Generally, what I recommend with athletes that I am working with, or with patients or clients that I have worked with in the past, what has worked the best is doing any kind of strength work before an easy aerobic-based day. What does that mean? That basically means that if you have on your training plan a day where it's a recovery type day, or it's a sweet spot day, or it's a technique based day, and I'm talking something, if you're following one of my training plans, for example, super spin day, where you're doing super spin single leg drills or something of that nature, where you're doing a sweet spot day, a 2x20 sweet spot block, or something of that nature. The day before a training day like that is an excellent day to work on some kind of strength training program. And the reason why is the strength training will basically inhibit any high intensity work you're about to do. Okay, so if you're going to do intervals on a Tuesday, For example, you're going to do, say, 9 by 3 minute VO2 max intervals, which is a great workout, by the way. 9 by 3 minute VO2 max intervals. If you're going to do those on a Tuesday, for the love of God and everything that is holy, and for the love of Eddie Merckx, do not do your strength training on a Monday, because I guarantee you, if you attempt to go out on a Tuesday and do your VO2 max intervals post-strength training, your life will be a new variety of hell. I can say that with 100% certainty, folks. I've done that a couple of times. Although I basically have just done hill climbing days afterwards, which, if any of you know what it's like to do heavy squats and then try to climb hills, drop me a comment. We're going to feel each other's pain. I pretty much guarantee it. The bottom line here, getting back to the topic at hand, is that before an easier aerobic day or a technique-based day is a perfect time to do some kind of strength training for a couple of reasons. Number one, you'll be able to do some easier work the following day, which will actually help to flush some of the junk out of your muscles. It'll actually help to bring some fresh blood into those muscles and help them heal in a quicker fashion in general, or reduce delayed muscle soreness in a quicker fashion. It will also help to sort of bed in that strength a little bit, especially if you're going to do some work like some muscular endurance work, which, remember, does not have to be high intensity. It can be lower intensity. It can be technique-based. It can be lower intensity. It can be sweet spot. But muscular endurance is a great way to bed in some strength training from the day before. All right. Keep that in mind. If you're going to have a rest day coming up, so for example, I'm recording on July 30th. If I have a rest day coming up tomorrow, today would have been the perfect day to do some kind of strength training in the gym. In my case, as I have it, it's a ride day today, and tomorrow is an upper body day in the gym, and lower body day on Saturday, and then rest for Sunday and Monday at this point. So basically, I'm planning my workouts as such that I build my aerobic fitness, I build my strength, and then I rest and let everything sort of recover and bed in a little bit. All right. What protocol would you be following now? Now that you know the timing of strength training versus aerobic training and how to recover, now that you know the hormonal pathways that are involved in that, what kind of program are you looking at in terms of strength training during your season? You can go a couple of ways with this. First of all, I'm going to speak to most of you who don't have access to a gym, don't pay for a gym, and don't go to a gym during the summer. I have it very, very, very fortunate that I have a gym in my office, actually. A fully stocked gym. So I can do this pretty much any day. And I can work with weights, I can work with medicine balls, I can work with Swiss balls, I can work with all kinds of things. But not everybody has that potential. Not everybody has that ability to do that. So for those of you who don't, here's a sample of what a leg-based, a cycling-based workout would look like for someone who has some minimal equipment at home, or even has no equipment at home, okay? Let's start with the obvious, a goblet squat. And I'm going to attempt to link most of these to the podcast show notes. So if you're curious what any of these are, you can generally pop right over to the podcast show notes and take a look at it, and that will help you out a little bit. Let's start with a goblet squat. Goblet squat is great for core stability and strength. It's also great. It's a great multi-joint compound exercise for the glutes, hamstrings, quads, and as well for the calves, and some stability and some endurance for the upper body if you add some weight to it. You don't have to add weight to it. You can do it as a simple body weight exercise, but you can even add a kettlebell or a barbell or any other kind of weight to it, a medicine ball, for example. That's a great way to start a strength program. Combine it with something like a single leg deadlift, and you can always add extra weight to that. Even if you're going to use weights like a gallon of water or a gallon of milk, that's a great way to add some stability and some strength to your body. Single leg deadlifts are huge for stability because it actually forces your body and your core to stabilize while you balance on a single leg, and that's a very tough thing to do. It takes a lot of practice, and it takes a lot of strength and conditioning to do so. Move on to calf raises. Again, they don't have to be weighted, but weight adds to the challenge of them, all right, and will make it a little bit more difficult. And again, You can do weighted calf raises with anything as simple as a cinder block or a gallon of water or anything else of that nature. And one of the easiest and best ways to do this and also get some decent stretch into the calf, which tends to be quite tight by this point in the season because most people don't stretch very well, is on the lip of a stair. That's a great way to do it. Just be very careful you don't fall backwards. Another favorite exercise is the lunge. So lunges, lunge walks, or cross lunges. Cross lunges are actually a very difficult variation of a lunge. In lunge, typically, you're going to take a giant step forward, and you're going to drop one knee to the floor while the other knee, basically, their thigh becomes parallel with the floor. And that will work the glute, the hamstring, the quad significantly, and it will also contribute to some stability as well. Cross lunges are a little different from standing with your feet shoulder width apart. You're going to take a giant step back and to the opposite side. So your right leg, for example, will take a giant step back to the left, approximately 45 degrees to the left. So you're basically going to be kneeling with your one leg behind you, the other leg in front. Very, very intense work on the lateral quads for the glutes and the lateral muscles of the hip, glute medius, glute minimus, and tensor fasciae lata. So that's another great exercise for you. Kettlebell workouts. This requires, of course, some kettlebells or something of that nature that you can swing. But kettlebell swings, if you look at them and you really analyze the movement of the hip, the knee, the upper body, and the foot, kettlebell swing is almost a perfect recreation of a pedal stroke. So it's a wonderful exercise for strength, for endurance, and for stability. Your upper body is also involved somewhat in that because your shoulders have to, you actually have to pinch your shoulder blades together and retract your shoulders to strengthen the mid part of the back in order to hold the kettlebell at the top of the swing. Consequently, those are actually the same muscles you use while you're riding in the drops to support your upper body a little bit. So it's a good thing. Kettlebells are incredibly versatile. You can do a million things with them. You can add them to single leg deadlifts, to goblet squats, to lunges, to calf raises. You can do things like Turkish get-ups for them, which will really, really challenge your core stability and function. You can add them to a million other exercises, all right? One of my favorite resources for exercises is bodybuilding.com because it will actually tell you exactly what you're working and how to do it in proper form. If you have questions whether or not this would be good for you, don't forget, shoot me an email. I'm always looking to answer emails, and I'm always willing to answer emails from my clients and from my listeners. So if there's something you're curious about, don't hesitate to ask. Additional exercises that are really good for building strength, fitness, and stability: bridges, either body weight or weighted, single leg, double leg, on a Swiss ball or not on a ball or on a medicine ball or something of that nature. All of those variations are great for building glute strength, hamstring strength, low back stability, and core stability. So keep those in mind as well. For core stability and a little bit of upper back strength and endurance, renegade rows are a fantastic way to do that. You put yourself in a push-up or plank position with your hands resting on two light dumbbells, and simply what you're going to do is row one of those dumbbells back up towards the ceiling, put it back down, row the other one back, put it back down, and repeat. You can always add a push-up in there in between to see if you can add a little bit more difficulty to the exercise. It's not entirely necessary, but it is something you can do. There's a million different kinds of things you can do with a Swiss ball or a exercise ball, one of those big blow-up balls, including core work, core stability work, balance work. You can do sit-ups on that. You can do glute bridges on that. You can do a number of different things on that. So for a very minimal equipment investment, you can really make some huge changes. And I'll include a couple of links to some of the equipment that you would use in the podcast show notes as well, the affiliate links for some of my stuff. So if you're looking for adding some strength training to your workouts, you can always pick these things up, and that'll help you out a few, help you out, pick a few things up that I know that I have used and that I use in the gym and have purchased for our gym that are really, really excellent equipment choices. Now, if you do have access to a gym, that's an entirely different story. You have access to presumably a significant amount of weight equipment, some machines, things like that. The big compound movements that you would use in a cycling type of paradigm are what you're going to be focusing on in the gym. The big ones here for me, the leg press, whether it's an incline or a machine, is huge. Hack squat is a really great exercise. You can look that up on bodybuilding.com. That can be done either by a machine or with a barbell and free weights. The barbell and free weights will really challenge core stability as well, whereas the machine will tend to isolate the lower body and work more quad, glute, hamstring, calf, as opposed to the barbell version, which will actually work some of your shoulder musculature and your stability as you have to lift up and down off the ground. Deadlifts, when done properly. I cannot stress this enough. When done properly. Most people do not do deadlifts properly. They end up rounding out their back, putting a lot of stress on their low back, on their lumbar spine, and those discs, and that's how a lot of injuries happen. In this case, deadlifts are going to be a great exercise. They're a very compound exercise, which works glute and hamstring, quad, calf, and low back musculature, as well as upper back posterior musculature for retracting the shoulders and packing the shoulders and stabilizing that bar. You can really isolate glute and hamstring if you're interested by doing a Romanian style deadlift. However, it does require a significant amount of flexibility. So if you are not very flexible, don't even try it. And lastly, the good old-fashioned squat, whether it is a front squat across the deltoids where the bar is balanced on the deltoids, or whether it is balanced across the posterior shoulders and the back of your neck. Those are all great compound exercises. I highly recommend that squats, and especially front squats, be done on a Smith machine so that you really minimize any potential injury that you're going to face. Let's talk sets and reps for a minute here. Winter time is the time to be doing high weight, looking for neuromuscular strength, and shorter sets and reps. Essentially, what you want to be doing here, you want to keep to a 3x10 or 3x12 paradigm. So what that would mean is you're looking for a weight that you can lift three sets, 10 to 12 reps, and basically be near failure by the end of that third set. And that's a very important thing, and very important point to make here. I think choose the words just properly here. There's two different ways to lift, and one involves neuromuscular adaptation, and one involves muscular hypertrophy. And through muscular hypertrophy and testosterone cascade increase, increases in myonuclei, and in turn, significant strength gains, and longer-lasting strength gains as opposed to that 5 to 10-second window. At this point in the season, you're not looking for neuromuscular strength. Neuromuscular strength will have been, for the most part, maintained if you're sprinting on a regular basis. If you're not doing any kind of sprinting work, which I'll get to on bike work in a moment, if you're not doing any kind of sprinting work, you may do one day a month or 2 days a month, maybe one day a week if you're really a track racer or something of that nature, in terms of heavy neuromuscular weight type strength training. And that is, basically, we're talking 3x4 sets and reps, three sets of four reps, and you should be essentially completely fatigued by the end of that. So you're looking for muscular hypertrophy, muscle growth, and increases in anabolic enzymes, muscle contractile enzymes, muscle contractile force, and things like that. That's all really longer duration, more endurance-based strength training. A note on upper body. I always recommend people do some kind of upper body work as well, only to balance out. I see way too many people with a significant forward head carriage with that sort of craned neck. I see a lot of people with those very rounded shoulders. They spend a lot of time on the bike, those shoulders drop down, the pecs tighten up, and you end up with that sort of rounded shoulder, kind of forward posture. Over a significant amount of time, that is really not good for you. That's why I encourage some upper body work. I encourage some arm and some bicep and tricep work and shoulder work to stabilize you on longer rides. And of course, I have to basically say it again, core stability is at a premium when you're riding your bike, because that is essentially where all of your power is coming from. Doesn't matter if you have the legs of a Greek god, if you have no core stability, you won't be able to apply that force for very long and you'll find yourself off the back. Now, bike work, on bike work, because everybody wants to be out riding, right? Well, you can be out riding and you can do some strength work on your bike while you're out riding. However, you just have to plan it in a little bit. Essentially, your on-bike work is going to consist of muscular endurance type drills, force work drills, high intensity work such as sprinting, track sprints, the track sprint workouts that I give to most of my athletes to increase neuromuscular coordination and power are real doozy workouts. You know, talk to anybody who's gone through some of my training programs and they will tell you those workouts suck. However, the gains seen through them are actually quite significant, so they are not to be ignored. Muscular endurance work, I still recommend during the season at least one day of muscular endurance work of some kind or another, whether that is broken down into 10 5-minute climbs, 5 10-minute climbs, one-hour climb, whatever the case may be. That high pedal tension is absolutely necessary to maintaining muscular strength. I also recommend that at some point during your training, you integrate force work back into your training plan at some point, typically anywhere between 1 day, 1 to 2 days per month, just to maintain the force that you have built up and the muscular strength that you built up throughout the winter and throughout your indoor strength training type exercises. Like I said previously, a great day to do strength training in the gym or at home is a day before you're doing muscular endurance work. Why? Because you're using the same type of patterns, the same muscles, and you're doing very similar things. Think of force work and muscular endurance work as your leg presses on the bike. And most of you know this, the steeper the climb, the more it feels like you're leg pressing the pedal each time it comes around. Folks, that right there is where strength training will help you a lot, I guarantee it. That's a lot of information to cover. I hope I didn't miss anything, and I hope I didn't really run through it too fast for anybody to understand. If you have questions, feel free to email me at coachrobdc@gmail.com. I'd be very, very happy to answer any questions you might have. Your take-home goal here, your take-home information is that you absolutely need to work strength training into your training routines during the season, and that's in order to maintain the gains you made in the off-season. You need to do it in such a way that it does not impact the quality of your high-intensity days or your interval days, and I've outlined that as well. So, that being said, if you have questions, feel free to shoot them to me at coachrobdc@gmail.com. You can feel free to post a comment on the podcast show notes, tailwind-coaching.com/60 for those podcast show notes. You can feel free to post in the Tailwind Coaching forums or on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, and I'd love to answer any questions you might have. If you're curious about any of the strength training exercises, like I said, I will try to link those in the podcast show notes, so take a look at those if you are interested. I want to thank you for listening. I hope you all ride strong, ride happy, get stronger throughout the season, keep the shiny side up, keep the rubber side down, and I will be looking forward to talking to you again real soon.